company, a light that seeps, softening, a heart still green.
We don't know, but that's where we grow, it's in the middle.
Middle to nowhere.
Hello, and welcome back to the Middle to Nowhere podcast, where we explore life's journeys and the unexpected turns that lead us to profound growth and understanding. I'm your host, Taylor Blompier, and today I'm really excited to share an incredible transformative experience that I had recently that I had mentioned on the last episode that I went to a silent retreat. So it was at a place that is a monastery. It's a Trappist monk monastery called Mepkin Abbey. It's about 45 minutes outside of Charleston in a little town called Monk's Corner, which I thought was named that because of the monastery, because it's been there for hundreds of years. But actually, I guess the guy who, very ironically, the guy who founded the little town, I really don't know what all he did, but his last name is Monk, M-O-N-C-K, though. So I was always confused by that, and I think most people are. But one of the tour guides there, I had overheard a guy mention that, and he corrected him. So anyway, a little tidbit. But this retreat that I came back from last week was from Monday through Friday, and it turned out to be one of the most enriching times of my life. It was really transformative, for me to fully embrace the experience. I decided to leave my phone at home. I didn't trust myself to just leave it in the car. So I told Christy, if there's any emergency, you're just going to have to call the retreat center and one of the monks will come come get me. That decision was just, I really wanted to deliberately just detox from just the, not that I'm on my phone a ton, but, just from the TV and all the screens and things like that. And it was actually really cool how quick the effects of not having my phone or TV around really kicked in. Didn't have the urge to check my phone. But it was funny because I didn't bring my phone, but I did want to listen to some music and maybe some meditations or something. And so I ended up bringing my friend Jesse's iPod. He's my close friend who recently passed away, and it was just so cool to have his music and walking around the beautiful scenery and listening to his playlists. It just felt like he was there with me, and so many of the songs just hit me in the most perfect ways. So it was such a sweet connection with him that just kind of added this deeply personal layer to the retreat already. So that was really fun. And a funny little note on that, I did watch a movie while I was there because Jesse had loaded, it's an old video iPod, and he had the Wes Anderson movie Darjeeling Limited. I just was talking about a Wes Anderson movie last episode, but Darjeeling Limited, watched it like once and a half while I was there. Really funny and quirky. And the only other thing video-wise he had on there, which I thought was amazing, was our friend, local musician and legend in Waco, Reeve Hunter, his LIVE in the HEB music video was on there. So I watched it like twice. So shout out to Reeve Hunter. That was just really funny. But yeah, it was just so cool to see how the monks live, seeing people who live in this regimen of rising super early in the morning, praying, singing, and taking communion was just pretty fascinating, and the silent retreat people, the retreatants, I don't know what you call them. You can actually, if you want to, participate in the rituals. And so I didn't do it every day, but I got up and did one of a couple of the morning services. You can just watch if you want to and just kind of sit in some chairs to the side. Or you can sit in, they have these like really cool booth type things, and there's a lot of ceremony to it. They stand at different times and they lift up this little chair when they stand up and put the chair back down. You sit back on the chair that's like on a hinge. But anyway, I participated, and like they have the song books and everything is very like clearly laid out, and you sing along with them in these kind of Gregorian style monk type songs. And we wait in the resurrection of the blah, 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 and the blah, blah, blah. And they just like kind of talk, like speech singing some of the different psalms and things like that. It was very not what I was used to whatsoever, but was pretty cool to take part in communion, things like that. And honestly, it was just really cool because I realized how much I've healed from my past, like church wounds. You know, for a while there, I carried a good bit of baggage and kind of some judgment around organized religion. And I don't know, just being at Mebkin, I felt none of that. Like, I mean, some of it's weird, and the whole monastic life is, it's very, like, there's a lot of rules, and, you know, they live there and they are celibate and all these things that I don't really understand. But the monks, you could just tell they were just so loving and gentle, and there was just never any pressure to participate in the services. I never felt judged. You know, I've got like tattoos and I'm wearing my mala beads, you know, which is like a Buddhist thing, and everything was optional, you know, which just really made the experience feel very welcoming and inclusive. And I even got to share my spiritual journey, my whole story of kind of why I was there with one of the monks there, this guy named Father Garrick. And I told him all about my psychedelic journeys and spiritual awakening feelings and all this stuff. And he was just really incredibly interested. And he had talked with some other retreat goers about similar things, and they're just way more open-minded than I would have thought. I mean, they're under the St. Francis arm, which is, you know, all about loving animals and things like that, which is very much so up my alley. But Father Garrick was even saying that they're like talking with other people about potentially, like, he thought probably not going to have actual psychedelic retreats there, but the idea of maybe having specific retreats that help integrate, you know, maybe after people had some sort of experience, which I mean, he's just incredibly open-minded and just totally didn't feel like I was talking to a monk, but just a really wise old guy. And, you know, who knows, maybe I'll get to have him on the podcast one day. He did say that he was super interested in keeping in touch with me, so I'll be sure to do that. But probably the biggest highlight of the week, though, came about 2 days into the retreat. You know, I'm listening to Jesse's iPod and walking around, and the grounds there are just immaculately beautiful. I mean, the monks do a lot of, I know they do a lot of like work every day where they, I'm sure some of them do gardening and stuff, but I didn't necessarily see any of the specific monks out there doing it while we were there. But I did see like they have grounds crews and stuff come in and mow the grass. But just if you can think of like some of those movies where they're like shot in Georgia or South Carolina, where it's just everything is so lush and green, and you have those big oak trees that are covered in the Spanish Moss and, you know, by a river, and it's sunset and the birds are chirping, and it's just such an incredibly beautiful place. So I will put the link to their website in the description. If any of y'all are in the South Carolina area or want to come visit, I highly recommend it. And you can see their like retreat schedule and things like that. So yeah, the highlight. So yeah, about 2 days into the retreat, something really cool happened. So I was probably the youngest person there. There was, I don't know, about a dozen of these retreat goers. We all have our own little apartment. There's like a whole retreat center that's separate from the actual where the monks live and stuff. We don't interact that much with the actual monks unless we're doing some of the services, because we don't eat with them or things like that. But I was, like I was saying, I was probably the youngest person there, and you know, it's a silent retreat and we're all eating our meals at specific times, so you're not really interacting much because you're not talking, but you know, like just eating at the same time, and you know, you smile at each other and stuff. But just being in other people's presence was kind of cool. And it's like, I don't know, almost like you hear about those organizations that help the blind. Some of them will have these blind dinners and stuff where you have your whole meal blind just to see what it's like. And it's cool how quickly people will say how their other senses were heightened. And I feel like this was kind of a similar thing where you can kind of just sense people's presences. And it was just really cool to see how they, you know, how people eat and all the little, it was fabulous people watching of just all the little idiosyncrasies that people have, or like, okay, this person over here is praying for their food and they do it in this very specific ritualistic way every time. And this other person's just, you know, I don't know, just all the little things. But I had noticed this elderly woman who seemed like probably the oldest person at the retreat by, you know, a good bit. And I don't know, she never really looked at me. She was kind of, you know, to herself and doing her thing. And there's like a retreat center, like common space area where they have some books and things and you can kind of just hang out and read or get some coffee or whatever, this kind of common space. And she came up to me on Wednesday and she broke her silence and she came over to me and she just told me that she really cherished my presence there. And she just was so warm, and it just really, for her to, I haven't seen her talk to anybody, and for her to come up to me and say that was really sweet. And so we started talking, and by the way, the silence thing isn't mandatory at Mepkin. They just ask you to wear this like blue lanyard thing if you specifically don't want anyone to talk to you. And obviously, like, everyone needs to be respectful of maintaining like quiet times in shared spaces and things like that, but it's not like illegal to talk. Like, obviously I was talking with the Father Garrick, the monk guy, so and so there's some people there that just, you know, wear the blue lanyards and they're totally doing their silent thing, and that's, you know, it's all optional. But so when I started talking to this woman, and she is an 84-year-old woman from Athens, Georgia, born in Galveston, though, what's up, Texas, named Karen, and we just immediately hit it off in the most unexpected of ways, you know, with the age gap and everything, just in just being so different. Like, she's like 50 years older than me, but it didn't matter at all. Our hearts were like so aligned. Like, I never know that I could have with a stranger like that, especially with all the differences. And yeah, so we got to talking and ended up going on a walk and stuff. But she's a Buddhist practitioner, who's been on a spiritual path for some time. You know, we really connected and bonded over some of the different teachers, and, you know, I was reading a Jack Kornfield book, who's under the Buddhist side of things, that she knows well and loves, and talked about Ram Dass and some of those people that are all connected in that wave of spirituality and psychedelics in the 60s that emerged. And anyway, it was just really cool. And the way she talked was just like, I don't know, talking to someone who somehow loves and knows your soul so much. I just instinctively, I don't know, just opened up to her so naturally and so deeply about certain aspects of my life story, and that normally some of the things would be a little bit touchy to speak about, especially to a stranger, and vice versa. She was just so open and telling me just amazing stories about her life. And she was an oncology nurse before she had retired, and talked about how she learned to use, like, being constantly around sick and dying people as a way to do her spiritual work, which I thought was amazing. You know, my mom has the exact same job, and, you know, so I'm used to hearing about just how hard that job is. You're just constantly around people who just have cancer, you know. So, but she talked about how she learned to meet each person with compassion and, like, a sense of just pure love and acceptance of them, and just help them come to peace with what was happening about dying. And yeah, just, we really connected over, you know, talking about my mom as well, just her being in oncology. And I know my mom is a few years away from retirement, so I know she's, like, ready to get there. And it's just the, Karen specifically has stayed in touch with kind of clearly, like, the whole nursing practice, and was just talking about, it was cool to see her perspective just on how hard it must be for those that are still working in the industry, especially since COVID, and just how impactful that was. And, yeah, I think I started getting just more and more empathy, because my mom has talked about just how hard work has been. And, you know, obviously the whole healthcare industry is just a nightmare, and there's just so many people who work in it, and nurses and things, that are just so burnt out because it's just being taken over by this kind of sort of, like, evil, greedy corporations that just kind of suck all the life and humanity out of things. And so it was just really good to get, like, her perspective on that. And I hadn't really I was just so open to seeing things differently, and, you know, thinking about my mom constantly being with people whose life is afflicted by what happens with cancer, and how it just blows people's life up and everyone who loves them, and seeing people die all the time that you get attached to. And honestly, I don't know how she does it, but I'm so grateful for those out there who feel called to that. And and as Karen and I were talking, I opened up to her just about my childhood, and talking about my mom. She was just, I think she just felt super connected to her, and we talked about, I talked about just how my mom was afflicted with severe depression when my sister and I were young, and, you know, so much so that my mom needed to be hospitalized on a few times because of, you know, suicidal things and just instability. And how I told I was telling Karen how she needed to move about 3 hours away from our home to Houston for her to get treatment that she needed. And, you know, I've had my bouts with depression as well. And so I have like a degree to know kind of how the water feels. But luckily I never, in my depression, this was kind of more some years ago when I was going through a little bit before I was going through my divorce and stuff. So it's like, I know what the water's like, but I only really hadn't really gone past like waist deep in that whole pool, if you will, where my mom definitely, unfortunately had to really just kind of got thrown in the deep end. But I know that, you know, I know that the feeling of depression enough to empathize with those who go through it and, have so much empathy for what my mom went through. But the way that Karen just has this ability to really hear what you're saying, and the way that she talked back to me, just like she just knows, like she was there, like she just knew what it was like. And, you know, for my mom to literally have to make the choice to leave her own children to get the help she needed. You know, sometimes in those type of situations, it's the people in your life that you love most that is the only tether you have to keeping you here in this life. And I know that in my mom and I have talked about this in the last few years. And, you know, my sister Rosie and I were that for my mom. And so Karen talked about how she's been in a similar stage in her life and talked about her perspective of what it must have felt like for my mom, and just like how incredibly hard it must have been for her to make that choice, and the guilt that would undoubtedly follow that decision, having to leave her children. And for me, like having been in therapy a good bit, I'd worked through some of that stuff, but I had never really heard like the clarity of my mom's suffering, in especially through this like ridiculously compassionate being that is my new friend Karen. But I don't remember exactly what she said, but something shifted inside of my heart as we were talking. It was as if I could actually put myself in my mom's shoes and see her world at that time, like through her eyes. And I started crying. I'm almost starting to cry just thinking about it. Oh gosh. But I just cried, and Karen just hugged me, you know, and held me for like a solid minute or two. I mean, honestly, it's got to be some sort of record. Like, I've never seen like a crying breakthrough this profound in multiple years of therapy, like in a session. And for it to happen, like it happened in the first 30 minutes of us talking. So golly. But, you know, there's something so profound about growing one's heart in when you're on your spiritual journey and you're doing all this inner work and stuff. And I found that learning to love people, you know, to this deeper and more transcendent level, to this like unconditional type of love, it takes not just the feeling of wanting to love someone, but just it takes truly understanding their journey of their life and taking the time to really ask the deeper questions to better understand not just the surface level, like who's, what's, when's, where's, why's, but like really what they're learning, what their experience must have felt like. And, you know, for kids who have experienced divorce and just unstable parental stuff in their childhood. Like, no matter the circumstances of why a parent has to leave, the child just doesn't have the capacity to understand, like, the complexities of adulthood and depression and all these different things. And, you know, being right around 6 years old when my mom needed to leave the home, it's really difficult to, like, wrap my mind around it as a kid. And as cliche as it is, there's an unconscious narrative that, you know, is just so common, that comes into the children in that situation, where they feel like it's their fault. They feel unworthy of love. And they feel abandoned, you know? And no matter what the, you know, there's really legitimate reasons why a parent needs to do that, and they just don't know. And God, it was, and now, like, because of that conversation with her and like expressing that and crying and all that stuff, and I'm realizing right now it's like coming up in me again, but it's coming from a place of that feels different. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but I feel like, you know, right during that conversation, I felt such a deeper and richer love and just pure empathy for my mom like I've never felt before. And I haven't gotten to talk this specifically about the conversation of it with Karen and all this stuff with my mom yet, but I'll get a chance to soon when I come back to Texas. But I just want to say, Mom, I know you're listening to this, and I just want you to know that I love you. I love you so much, and I just want you to know that there is truly nothing that you've ever done that needs forgiveness from me. Now that I understand, there's no need for forgiveness. And more than anything, I hope that you can come into a deep and true place of healing and forgiveness for yourself more than anything. This isn't something to be ashamed of at all, but it's actually your story of resilience and strength. And reconciliation. And I just want to thank you for doing what you needed to do to stay here on this earth. And I'm so grateful for how my life has turned out, and I wouldn't change a single thing. And this is your story, your hero's journey. Wow. Wasn't expecting to do that on this episode. But it feels really good to do that. So I hope that's okay to share, Mom. Anyway, so yeah, Karen and I had all these other beautiful conversations, and she told me just kind of snapshots of her life story, and talked about her children and her grandchildren, and being married and getting divorced and then getting married again, and having to take care of her husband before he passed away. And I think that was back in 99 when her last husband passed, and how she had to go back to work after that for a few years, back as a nurse, and talked about retirement. And it was just this beautiful thing to just talk to. There's not that often that I get to talk to people who've lived that long and experienced that much. And it was just incredible. And since coming back, Karen and I have stayed in touch, so it's been really cool. But yeah, like Karen, we ended up hanging out pretty consistently over the course of those last 2 days. So went from silent retreat to not so silent retreat, but very well worth it with my new friend. And we, took walks around this majestic place that is Mepkin, just talking sometimes in silence, just looking at the ancient oak trees covered in Spanish moss sitting by the Cooper River, sometimes in silence, just to soak up the majesty of it all. And one morning I even saw dolphins in the river and watched squirrels chase each other around, and it was cool to see how the dragonflies did the same thing. They would just play with each other, and one of them would come and fly and land on the other one's back, and then the other one would chase them around and do the same thing. And it's just like watching our cats play or something. And it was just really cool to see that there's this like synergistic thing that can happen when you're around someone whose heart is also open. And like, as soon as I started talking with Karen, it was almost this like spontaneous multiplication of just love, joy, and peace that we both experienced together. It was almost like, I don't know, like closing a loop on an electrical circuit or something, but we were both just wowed with how we felt. We've just felt so inspired and creative and joyful and just peaceful. And God, it was just, the Grinch style, just his heart grew 3 sizes that day. Honestly, like it was a high that was familiar feeling. It was a very familiar feeling that I had on psychedelics, of just being wrapped in this like warm blanket of love and having a deep sense of connection with all things and how everything in the universe all fits together. And very reminiscent of like my afterglow effect from my spiritual awakening deal that I've talked about on the previous podcast. But I mean, it makes sense, like humans, all things, we actually vibrate on an invisible but measurable, like molecular level. Different parts of our body can vibrate at different and unique frequencies. Like this has all been studied, and there's lots of work out there that's like really insightful to use. This guy called Dr. David Hawkins, who's like studied this stuff for most of his career, and he's connected in measurable ways how certain emotions vibrate at different levels. And what was I saying? ADHD. Yeah, the measurable ways. So each of these emotions have they're like their own kind of frequency to it. And simply put, the negative emotions like shame or guilt or grief like vibrate at this lower frequency, and emotions like courage or love and peace vibrate higher. There's you can look it up. It's called maps of human consciousness, and they're all like color coded and stuff. It's a whether you believe it or not, it's interesting to look into. So I definitely encourage all of you to have an open mind and just say, I don't know, what, maybe. But there's actually a lot of science behind you know, this whole vibration thing. So yeah, maybe the Beach Boys were into something. I'm talking about good vibrations. But anyway, so, but yeah, like back when I had my spiritual awakening and I was feeling this afterglow that I've talked about, you know, I felt like I just loved everyone and everything around me. You know, I didn't see strangers as like other. I didn't see animals as like other separate things. I don't know how to describe it. Like for example, if I saw strangers just waiting in line at Starbucks or something, I would like wonder if they're having a hard day or if they're going through something hard, and would just like be sending love towards them, you know, just kind of silently to myself, and just having thoughts like that, that just aren't normal. You know, I'm usually completely caught up in my own stuff. And yeah, it was just that being that love. And I was filled with patience, a lot of patience that does not come normal to me. But like, for example, like somebody would, you know, during my afterglow, somebody cuts me off in traffic, and immediately I would respond like in my head, you know, instead of just like, you know, F you, what the heck? Like I normally kind of would, you know, at least in my mind, I responded with like, oh, I hope they're okay. And it's not an emergency, you know, even though that it might very well be like a lot of people out there, they're just a jerk driver, but it's like, I didn't have the need for those harsh snap judgments of other people, because it just didn't matter and it wasn't useful for me to think like that. I kind of like the if you're familiar with some of the Buddhist teachings, they use, I really like the word they use for that, it's just unskillful thoughts or habits. But anyway, like when somebody's vibrating on an exceptionally high level like that, it can have incredible effects to their environment around them, because everything is vibrating in its own energy. It's affected by other vibrations. And this kind of concept can be shown when you have like two tuning forks, one of them at the same frequency. Let's say you had a tuning fork for like, for the music people, like an A440 tuning fork, you ding it, boom. That's probably not actually A440, but boom. And you have the tuning fork next to it that you did not hit, starts to resonate at that same frequency and starts to vibrate. And it starts to, you can hear it from the other tuning fork when it's in a close enough range. And so it's the same kind of concept with people and things. Like if you're vibrating at this high level, your vibrations raise kind of the environment that you're in. So it kind of, you know, people can, who are normally a little close-minded or judgmental, all of a sudden just have this kind of like lightness and joy around you that I've experienced with people, having really, you know, great conversations with strangers, and they may rarely ever talk to strangers or would be the type of person to do that, but they just felt in the mood, you know. But it's cool because animals are, you know, particularly sensitive to the vibrational frequencies in other people and things, and they just have all these sensitivities to things. And we kind of all know this and understand this without really knowing it, or knowing the science behind it, you know, kind of like in the way that we say that dogs can smell fear, or if you've seen some of the studies where dogs have actually been trained to detect cancer in patients. Essentially what's happening is they like are trained to detect these certain vibrations, and they pick up on it. and the studies are really fascinating. So just Google it. I don't have the materials or remember the names of these studies, but you can Google it. Some really, really cool stuff. But back like a year and a half ago, during that afterglow time that was after my spiritual awakening, I had multiple really profound interactions with animals. Like there's this one time that I'm leaving, I like went to the dermatologist and I was driving my wife Christy's Jeep, and as I was leaving, something in my gut just, you know, as I'm pulling out of the parking space and driving down the road, like something in my gut told me to just slow down and be aware. It's not like a voice that comes to me. It was just this intuition to just slow down and be aware. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna slow down and be aware. And just at that moment, or like a few seconds after I had that moment happen, being aware, slowing down, I notice a dog who was being walked like on the sidewalk next to the road, all of a sudden just darted out into the street, the like mechanical leash thing that the owner was holding just pops out of her hand. The dog darts into the street directly where I would have been driving had I been going the speed limit, and not had the awareness to slow down. But since I had like slowed down and my awareness was up, I had already come to like a complete stop, was completely aware, like almost seeing it in slow motion. By the time the dog was in the road, I was like already at a safe distance and had stopped. But what's even crazier is what happened next is that the dog basically did like an L form. It like went straight into the road, stopped, looked at me, and ran directly under the car, under the Jeep. And of course the owner is like freaking out, and I rolled down the window and the lady's like yelling like, stop, don't move. I'm like, no, I'm not moving. And then all this, it was kind of weird. She was like, can you drive forward just like a foot? I'm like, oh, what the hell? Am I going to run over this dog? But apparently the leash, had like gotten stuck under the tire and she couldn't pull it out. And so I like drove over the leash and she got the dog. And, you know, as I was like driving away, you know, I'm like waved. And of course the woman was just profusely like, thank you so much for stopping. Oh my God. And she's freaking out. And, the dog just would not turn away from me. Like as I was driving away, I look back in the rearview mirror and the dog's like, you know, she's like trying to pull the dog out of the road and the dog's like wanting to look at me. It was so strange. And just multiple like weird animal things like that happened. Like a few days after that, you know, this is still back in my afterglow, I had gone to a bar that I went to every week because I was setting up for an open mic night that I used to run at a place called Stone's Throw Tavern. And as I was setting up, you know, the music equipment and stuff, I saw that there's this lizard. It almost kind of looked like a Geico commercial because his hand was like on the window and he's looking outside and he's like trapped in this restaurant. And, you know, my initial thought was like, oh crap, like, am I going to have to find like some sort of cup? You know, is someone going to try to like kill it in the process if I ask somebody for something? My gut just was like, no, like just, and so I just like reached out my hand and this lizard just immediately crawled onto my hand. I took it outside and laid him on like a little tree branch, and he like responded with, he like turned to me for like 3 seconds with kind of this like knowing stare. And I swear to God, he like winked at me. And, well, to be fair, like his head was turned So he could have easily just been like a slow blink or something because I couldn't see his other eye. But it sure felt like he knew that I had saved him and he was just being appreciative with a little, thanks, buddy. This will be my last little kind of sidebar animal story. But the most profound animal interaction came, all these animal things happened during the afterglow effect a year and a half ago. And what's really cool is towards the end of this afterglow, the month long thing, I went for the first time to Mepkin Abbey, not for a silent retreat, but for a Tai Chi retreat. Because especially back then I was like, silent retreat, because my wife had gone to the silent retreat. She's like, you need to go to Mepkin Abbey. And I was like, how about I go to and do the Tai Chi thing just to be there? And that way I don't have to it sounds boring just being, going for silence. So the crazy animal thing that happened there was, sorry, burpee. Excuse me. I will edit that out. Hopefully I remember it too. Anyway, this interaction came at Mepkin Abbey, Tai Chi retreat. We do our Tai Chi thing. I think this was the first night we were there. We do a session. I don't know these people. They don't know me, but I'm having a good time. We have dinner just there at the retreat center. And after dinner, the rest of the Tai Chi peeps like had all gone to another, they were going off to another part of the monastery to have like a fire pit hangout type of evening. And I naturally I wanted to join them. But again, there was something in my gut that just kind of made me feel like, maybe I should hang back and go back to my room and maybe just have some alone time for a bit. And so went back to my little apartment room for a little while and, read for about 30 minutes until I felt just kind of like a feeling of like, yeah, all right, I'm ready to go join them now. And so when I walked out of my room, the retreat center, it was nighttime and just complete dead silent kind of ghost town feeling, not like a dark or scary feeling, but just like it's very quiet and it's nighttime, dark out, and the moon was shining, and I'm about to walk over there, and then out of nowhere, this like sickly looking but really cute hound dog like walked out of the forest. The whole Mepkin Abbey is like kind of full of nature and foresty areas, but walks right out of the forest up to me, and it's like very clear that he like needs help. And so you could see his ribs, like he's been really hungry for some time. And so I ended up giving him some extra food that we had left over from dinner, and just some water, to which he was just famished. So he's there eating and drinking. I'm just petting him and I'm trying to call the number that's on his collar. Luckily he has a collar and, like a really nice thick leather collar. Like somebody is missing this dog. And, I wish I could remember the name. I may have to try to track that down. I forget the name of the dog, but anyway, for some reason I keep calling the number on this caller, I'm the caller calling the caller number, but it just keeps going to this dead number. It's like, it's not connected, blah, blah, blah. And I keep dialing it and I'm, petting him and, making him feel good and loved. And then there's this, person, there's just this like massage therapist, that kind of works in tandem with the Tai Chi retreat things. They get, they'll do massage sessions, for some of the retreat goers and stuff. But this, massage therapist, Dana, who was, she was just like hauling her table and different things to her car. And, you know, she saw that I was there with the dog, and she like very quickly kind of sprang into action to help me. And she dialed the number as well. And I don't know what I was doing, but I must have somehow repeatedly been misdialing, because she immediately got through to the owner, and it was crazy. Like, in the most serendipitous way, this woman, Dana, being like, she's from the Monk's Corner area, and she happened to know the owner of the dog. And so we like very easily put her, put this dog, I think it was him, into her car. And within like 15 minutes, this dog was reunited with his family. And it was like, okay, that happened. Wow. And then I just, all right, she left with the dog and, you know, walk down to the old bonfire with a cool story. So, yeah. So it's very interesting how, when you're just, how it's like animals who need help, or things like when you're just vibrating on a level like that. Similarly to the story I told about me being first on scene to help that guy who was trapped in his car unconscious and breaking out the back window a few days after my first mushroom experience and in the afterglow. It's like there are people out and animals out there in the world that need help, and it's as if you become like open to being used for different situations that need your help. And anyway, like fast forward back to now, you know, being at Mepkin Abbey again last week, it was crazy because what was so cool, you know, and I'm like realizing it now, like I had tapped into what felt like this same level of energy and frequency, you know, being in this synergy with my friend Karen and in her presence and having this exponential effect. You know, I just had this same feeling of just feeling one in nature, having awareness and gratitude, even for the blades of grass that I would walk on the last 2 days I was there. It's hard to describe being in that state where, and obviously it's much easier being in that state when you're just in this beautiful scenery and there aren't cars whizzing by and like, you know, car driving by, somebody whizzing on, you know, all these things that we deal with. But, you know, I talked with the squirrels, I talked to the dragonflies, and told them how beautiful they were. It sounds really silly, but it is almost like this kind of what you can imagine some of these really heart-centered Native American tribes and their beliefs were kind of like, you know, feeling one with Mother Earth. And the dragonflies were kind of my big moment this trip at Mepkin as far as interacting with animals, like kind of similar to the lizard. Like I held out my hand and they would like, I just tried it, and the dragonfly, there's, you know, they would come over and fly on my blanket while I was meditating, and I just stuck my hand out and they walked onto my finger, and I was able to like walk around with them and take them for strolls, like, you know, just down the way with the dragonfly on my finger and just having a conversation with, ask him how their day's going and stuff. Like, just to be clear, I'm not hearing anything back yet. I'll let you nut guys know, and you guys can worry about me if they're talking back. But it was honestly really wild. Like, you know, these dragonflies were just playing and doing all these things, and I'm watching them, and would, you know, come on my finger, and I'd bring them in close on my finger, and we would like stare into each other's eyes, like staring into this other creatures beautiful, and like the iridescent eyes, they're just so cool looking, and just have this open heart where I'm just telling them how cute they were. And I really had this feeling like they could really feel it and they appreciated it. And I would tell them, you know, like, you're such a good boy, you're such a good, kind of like I talk with our cats, you know. And I would just watch the way their mouths moved, and like the such like intricate ways they have, all these little, I don't know, little almost kind of pseudo pincer type things that they use to eat bugs with, and it just looks really wild that up close. And just notice how they had like a set of legs for them to stand on things, but they also have these like little smaller T-Rex kind of arms that are just used for like holding things and putting little bugs and things in their mouth. And, you know, I picked up green dragonflies and blue ones, and I like was kind of almost, I don't know, I almost was kind of joking to myself that they're like different clans and stuff. They clearly play with each other, so they're not racist dragonflies, but I really wanted, there's these beautiful red ones, and they seemed, for whatever reason, just a little bit more skittish. And but the very last day, I picked up a red one, and I named it Rose. And she was really cute. But, you know, some of, when I was talking to these dragonflies, some of them would have moments where they would like, you know, because they would kind of be doing their thing. Sometimes they would have like a bug that they're working on, chewing on and stuff, and they would kind of look at me and, but kind of do their thing. And, but other times they would have moments where they would like stop their mouth movements and just lock eyes with me. And they would kind of turn their head from side to side, like while they're still staring, kind of like how dogs, if you've ever seen how dogs try to understand, like, they'll kind of do that cock eared thing where they turn their head sideways. And, but yeah, they turn their head side to side, and I would kind of mimic them. But it was, it looked like they were just trying to figure me out. And I even saw, like, honestly, what looked like the sweetest little smiles that their mouths would make a few times after they, like, we'd be staring into each other's eyes, and they would, like, literally just their mouth would make this little smile. And, you know, I'm not on mushrooms, I'm not, you know, on anything, and I'm just, like, having these moments where I'm like, is this really happening right now? This is incredible. And this ability, this like newfound ability, definitely like wowed both Karen and I. And I was even able to bring some of the dragonflies over to her on my finger and like let it crawl onto her hand. And she was just having the time of her life. And there was just such profound moments of bliss and serenity with all of it. And yeah, I'm just such a life-changing experience for so many ways that I haven't even fully unpacked. And I know it'll continue to, you know, realize different things and how, you know, look back at that time and just how impactful it was. But now just with a little bit of hindsight, you know, less than a week ago, I just realized that in a deeper way that this state is achievable without, you know, the help of psychedelics or other plant medicines. And it just is really motivating me to get more serious about like getting into a meditation discipline. You know, maybe taking some meditation classes or find someone to study with. Because it's, you know, I do meditate, but it's hard. You know, I've got ADHD, and we're just in today's day in life, slowing down is like the opposite of what is comes natural to us, and our attention spans. But I just feel that the universe had clearly placed Karen on my path and put me at Mepkin and her at Mepkin at the most perfect of timings. You know, she had regularly gone to Mepkin for silent retreats, like annually for about like 20 years. But she hadn't been back there since COVID. So it's, you know, it's been 4 years plus since she's been able to go. And so, and, you know, they have these retreats all the time, these retreats all the time. And the timing was just amazing that it lined up in the way it did, and that she actually reached out and said something. There's just, you know, when you think about things like that, it so easily could have not happened. And she's just been so loving since we've been back from the trip, and, you know, made sure to text me and let me know she got home safe and all that. I mean, she's just amazing. She drives still. She was walking all over the place. She's just, I don't know how many people I've met that, excuse me, is as just with it mentally as she is, let alone at her ripe age of 84. It's just incredible. But I think she's been doing a lot of living well, you know. But yeah, really excited to get to visit her and do the podcast. And yeah, just being back, she's just been sending me loads of encouraging and just wise texts and emails. And I don't know, I honestly feel like I've gotten to meet and like become friends with my guardian angel, who still happens to exist in human form. Like, gosh, like, I just feel so lucky. And I feel like, I don't know, I just need to take a second even now to just be grateful for all of it. And yeah, I'm so grateful for this life that I have and that I've had, and that is grateful for the life that is continuing to unfold. And, you know, if you've ever heard people talk about the concept of like manifestation, or visualization techniques, like manifesting your reality or whatever, there actually is a lot of truth to it. Though there's plenty of, that's the thing with spiritual stuff, like you got to be very discerning, because there's so many snake oil salespeople with all this stuff. So the whole thing of like manifesting, you know, abundance, manifest wealth, all this stuff has become really popular. And you got to be careful to just not listen to people that seem like they're out to get things and get money. But the idea around the concept of it, though, is, you know, like when you are truly vibrating at a higher state, your intentions, your dreams, you know, your wishes of your heart are kind of already aligned with your soul's purpose. So you don't really need to think of things that you want, like, oh, you know, I want to attract more wealth, or I want a car, or I want a big house, or I want to be famous. Like, many people get lost in materialism and getting things and get stuck because it's not working, you know? And it's because you know, their materialistic and kind of selfish intent doesn't align with what they're actually here to do. And so, yeah, it's not really something that you can come to and like just force to make happen. You become open to what's like to the what's and where's that the universe or God is leading you to. These things come up, you know, in your own timing, and they come up intuitively and through different kind of these different signs and wonders and cool things that are happening. You start having these instances, like instance after instance, kind of like with Karen, like where you meet random people and, you know, these people come into your life at random times. Not all of them become friends like Karen, but just, you know, random strangers that encourage you along your journey when you need it. And what I've found, and just from things that I've read with other people who have gone through similar things, this usually happens a lot, like right at the beginning of a spiritual awakening, especially if it's kind of a kind of full-blown, all-at-once kind of thing, because it's very scary and chaotic, and you kind of need a lot of, it makes sense, you need a lot of guidance and encouragement. But, you know, I had about a dozen or so just incredible interactions with strangers, you know, at the gym or the coffee shop, or, I don't know, random things like going to a stranger's house to buy a barbecue grill off of Facebook Marketplace that turned into this life-changing conversation where I'm like encouraging her and she's crying and, you know, she's telling me, this is, God sent you here and this is exactly what I needed to hear. And that's a awesome story that I'd love to tell at some point. But anyway, but what's happening isn't like like I'm getting what I want thing that a lot of people think is what manifestation is about. I mean, it is. I am getting what I want, but it's almost like what I didn't know I wanted. It's this kind of innate, it's the desires of this unconscious and true self that exists outside of my ego. And you know, it's as if you just kind of become this empty vessel to be used, you know, for the purposes of what the divine, what the universe is doing, whatever the divine wants to do in the world. You kind of, I don't know, it's like you opt in to this invitation to like, I will subscribe to being used for the love that is on the move here on earth, for the forces of good. You know, you meet others who encourage you, and you're just put in situation to also encourage other people. And yeah, anyway, I just want to say too, like, I know that most of you guys who are listening know me personally, and I don't have to say this because you know and love me and know my heart, but like, I just want to say I hope that you know that I say all of this stuff with the most sincere heart that I have the capacity to have right now. You know I talk so much about myself and my own stories. And, you know, honestly, it's been a conscious like struggle to be able to talk about myself so much. And that's kind of one of the reasons starting this podcast is like, in the past, like I hate when people come off as like full of themselves, you know, in a really cocky and negative way. And I've always thought that humility is such a wonderful characteristic to strive for. And I still do, and I hope that it comes out that way. But you know, I'm learning that there's a huge difference between like idolizing yourself and just truly loving yourself in the most like healthiest of ways. And, you know, when my ego is in check and I'm staying consistent and disciplined to stay in that flow where I have the awareness to check myself before I wreck myself, you know, I realize that I'm truly no better than anyone else. You know, it's easy. It was easy when I've had these moments happen in my life. It's easy for me to compare those times with other times where I'm not as aware and I can beat myself up. And, you know, this progression, this, you know, this evolution of the soul is not a linear thing. It's, you know, it's kind of a pinball machine. Like if you zoom into like a stock market thing that goes up and down every other day, it's going up and down, but hopefully as you see a trend over time, it rises at an increase of about 9% per year. But yeah, there is just that difference between just loving yourself and being full of yourself, but trying to keep my ego in check and just really be, really know that I really do say that. You know, I feel like I'm in a really, did some meditation right before this, so I feel like I'm in a good headspace to trust what I'm saying, but I really do, at least right now, I'm no better than anyone. But rather, like this is just, for me right now, this is just the current iteration of my life's karmic journey. You know, if there are, let's say you have like two roses, beautiful roses that are side by side, and, but one of them is blooming and the other one is still closed. One isn't better than the other. One is just in the process of blooming and the other one is in a different stage. And this is how I see how we're all like on our own unique journeys and stages of our lives, where, you know, situations and obstacles are showing us whatever we need to learn next. And, you know, we learn, you know, whatever's coming up in us, we learn that lesson, and then we're given new ones to learn, new obstacles to overcome. And over time, you know, the things that no longer serve us, the things that we can let go of, you know, those things get chipped away, you know, like from a granite block, if you will, of our each unique reflection of the divine, you know, and hopefully chiseling away, you know, one lesson at a time, life after life, to eventually reveal the perfect and one-of-a-kind masterpiece that we each are. And yeah, I am so pumped about some of the ideas and the guests that I have that I'm trying to line up that I can't wait to share with you all. I'm getting a lot of energy. There was definitely a lull in the podcast a bit, and I was kind of questioning myself. It's a daily back and forth, like I was saying. But yeah, I'll be on a road trip for the next few weeks to see as many friends and family as possible in Texas and in Colorado, as well as in Georgia on my way back. See my friend Karen. But I'm just so thankful. I'm just so thankful to be able to do what I'm doing right now. I'm so incredibly thankful for my wife, Christy, holding down the fort. I know, like cheesy husband moment right now, but I would be remiss to say, like, I just feel so supported and grateful for her working as hard as she does and for supporting me while I'm working on all these projects and making my dreams come true, you know. So I love you, Bonds. But I'd also really just genuinely like to thank those of you who are listening and those of you who've reached out to me and let me know that you're enjoying the podcast. I can't thank you enough and tell you how encouraging and helpful it really is for me while I'm trying to, you know, get over all these lingering insecurities of doing this thing that is scary and vulnerable. So thank you for the encouragement, and this is where I will leave you. I love all of you so much, and namaste.